I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence.
Joining us today in studio in Pretoria is Ms. Mashiko Dlamini, the Deputy Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform in the Republic of South Africa. She's also currently serving as a member of the Provincial Executive Committee of the African National Congress, as well as the African National Congress's Women's League Provincial Executive Committee in Mpumalanga. Prior to her appointment as a Deputy Minister, Ms. Mashiko Dlamini served as MEC for Health, Welfare and Gender Affairs in 1994. She was appointed MEC for Agriculture, Conservation and Environment in 1999, until she was tasked with leading the Department of Public Works from 2004 to 2007 in Mpumalanga. She was also the Mpumalanga MEC for Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Administration from late 2010 to early February 2013. She was then appointed as Mpumalanga MEC for Health and Social Development from 2013, and regarding academic qualifications, she pursued a BA degree, after which she read for a Bachelor of Education in Education Management. She holds a Diploma in Public Management from the University of South Africa and is currently studying towards a Master degree in Public Management. Welcome to the show, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much.
It sounds like your portfolio when you were in Mpumalanga has almost touched every point possible.
Yes. What is left there is human settlement and local government.
But I'm sure
for that.
Part of that is included into the spectrum of your portfolio now.
Yes.
You've served the country for many years, and during that time you've held various positions. Can you share with us some of the landmarks in your career thus far?
Well, as an MEC for Health, we produced a simplified primary healthcare manual, a book that really educate communities in terms of how to go about on primary healthcare issues that are just done right in the house before you go to clinic, and when they go to clinic, what is it that they must expect. And that was a book that we produced with an international funder. So I feel that, I still feel that it is still relevant even now.
Of course.
For people to really understand the basic issues on primary health care. You can't just take a child to a clinic on issues that you can just start to do something.
It's a first line of defense, and it's obviously so much easier when you're talking in a rural context to be able to do something in your home than to travel out to find a clinic, then come back when you can actually solve the solution right there and then.
Yes. The second one, when I was in agriculture, we introduced several programs. One of the very critical programs is called Masibele Masimini, going back to the field. And we really supported. It was a serious mechanization program where we are helping our communities, especially those who are farming for subsistence, helping them to farm, tractors, seeds, fertilizers, extension workers to support them, how to do things and all that. So that program became very big, and it was also adopted as a national program.
Oh, congratulations.
By the Department of Agriculture at that time.
It's fantastic when work moves and you've got those learnings which reapply to the bigger scheme in the country.
Yes.
And in terms of your future milestones, is there any specific area that you want to accomplish now in the current term of office?
Well, in the current term of office, my responsibility, as you know, that the department is Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So I'm delegated a rural development function. In that function, we're developing our rural areas. We have identified 27 districts. More so, I have started the work while I was MEC for Agriculture. So now, and what I've done there in terms of the implementation of a rural development, a program called the Comprehensive Rural Development Program, I got an award as an MEC in my province, an award of coordinating the rural space and bringing services to the people and simplifying our work in the rural area. And now I'm appointed a deputy minister in the relevant department as well.
I think that's a bigger reward than just receiving an award.
Yes, so I've been rewarded further to be now a deputy minister for the same department. So my responsibility here is to coordinate 26 departments, national departments, and all municipalities, all district municipalities, all provinces, in terms of rolling out service delivery in a rural area.
And I know you said you were simplifying the process, but the reality is it's very complex because you are looking at integrating functions from 26 different departments.
Yes.
And coordinating them in order to achieve that land reform. So whether it is about building a school, whether it is about building a bridge, it's having those relationships and ensuring that those systems are all coordinated.
Yes, we're also building communities, especially in the land that we have restituted, in the land that we have bought for farm workers, farm dwellers. What we normally do, we build that community from scratch. We train them how to make bricks. We train them how to build a house. And they build their own houses. They demarcate their own grazing land. We put solar systems for them not really to worry too much about electricity. We put solar system street lights. We build crèches in that community so that we really create a community. One of the communities in Mpumalanga called Jabulani Agri-Village. The other one is in the Eastern Cape called Greenwaywood Agri-Village. So we felt that in areas where we've given people land, because people get ownership of land for a certain period staying in that particular farm. So we buy the farm, we hand over to the farm workers, farm dwellers, we develop them. And we create communal grazing, communal farming, and we create a community for them so that they benefit to all what South Africa is doing. We're quite aware that we've got Human Settlement Department, but it can't stretch up to that level because our communities need houses in cities, they need houses everywhere. So in farms, we are building on our own budget and building better houses, of course, because it's the people that are building their own houses. We train them, we buy machinery, they make their own bricks. We give them stipend. As they're doing that, we give them stipend because we would have bought or hired a contractor. But now we didn't hire a contractor, we're training them. So we give them a stipend, they get something taking home every month until they finish the project. And it becomes very easier because they become very proud of their own product.
It's their handiwork. It's about contributing,
yes,
to a sustainable development,
yes,
as opposed to a hand out. It's a hand up.
Yes.
For people,
yes,
to engage and feel proud about their achievements.
Yes.
It must be very rewarding when you see those
very
successes.
Very rewarding. It's very interesting because now they can build whoever's house. They can even make the bricks and sell them now as a business. You know, we did a survey on housing, different settings. We went to a rural area. We started from the township.
Mm-hmm.
Style and all that. We listen to the people. The people want housing. They need houses and all that. They need these RDP houses and so on. Now we went to a rural area. We coordinated people there. Then said, what about housing? Then people said, oh, don't want this government house. It makes us to be more poor.
That's interesting.
Yes. They said, no, we don't want this government house. What if government give us the material and we build the house that we want.
So that goes to all of the work that you're doing in
yes.
your current position on building communities
yes.
and having them physically
yes.
involved in doing
yes,
that.
Because very few that will say we need an RDP house. But the rest, you go around, you drive around in rural communities. A person has built one room with bricks, one room, and he has put a foundation. Can you see this person is really planning to grow? But he's building, he's putting a room by room, a room by room. I had to stand there and explain to the eminent people to say, you see, in a rural area, every person wants to be proud about his own things. This person has put this one room. Can you see now there's a foundation? When the man explained the foundation, he said, this part of the foundation is a garage, but he does not have a car.
He's planning for the future.
Yeah, it's a garage. Then this one, it's a room, it's a kitchen, it's a dining room, and so on. So now these small bricks that I'm putting here, I'm making them every month. I buy 2 bags of cement and I make these bricks. I will build this garage because it's a bigger space and close it. So I will come bit by bit. I don't have money, but the government says to me, if I need a house, I must take this small house. You see, I must take this small house. So now I'm not prepared to take this small house unless if government will say, take this money, see what you're going to do for your own house. So now I've learned that day to say no. We have got a program, but this human settlement does not fit to other people. We need a system or another program that will say, you are fit, you know how to build, here is your money or your 150,000 for your RDP house. Build a house, and you must come and see the house. You know, those people can do wonders, but we don't have a program like that. You see, so now that's what we are. So as rural development now, what we are doing, we are supporting them with skills to make bricks first, skills to build. We have service providers that are training them how to do this. They go on site, they build, they come into class, they teach them how to do this, they go back and build until they build their community.
Well, thank you for sharing some of the realities of what's happening
yes.
in our rural areas within South Africa. And in the department's structures, I know you said it's about building communities, and we know that women are significant components mm-hmm. of communities. Are there any particular programs in place to help uplift women?
Well, we've got many programs. You know, our women in the community, they are in hospitality, baking, they are in sewing, they are in arts and crafts. So the biggest program that we are running now is arts and craft. We've got 93 cooperatives that we have formed since 2014, since I arrived in the department. 93 cooperatives of arts and craft. We're supporting them, we're funding them. Now we have reached a level of building a cooperative bank for them, but now we'll be launching the financial institution because they've collected the money. You know, when you create a bank, you go step by step. The first step is financial institution, which we have reached now. So we'll be launching it very soon on the Women's Month, I think, if things go well. The board is there. We have appointed the board, training them now so that they can run that bank. So we want them to reach a level of a cooperative bank, because a cooperative bank, you're supposed to have 1 million in the bank. Then you can have a cooperative bank. So now we're getting there.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic
yes.
development.
Yes, so the women that are doing crafts, they are selling their crafts internationally and locally. You go in all the beach in South Africa, we've got outlets there that women are using. They go to they make exhibition anywhere, we support them, because some that are supposed to go internationally, we fly them there so that they get orders and all that. We have created a shop for them for packaging, because they must do quality control, package and send it overseas. So the shop is in Durban.
So you're entwined with small business, tourism.
Yes.
It's all bringing things
yes.
together, those interconnections.
Yes, that's our biggest women program. And the second one is in clothing. So in clothing, we've got women that are training other women in rural areas to create a market for clothing. We've got an agreement with a person who's doing clothing for bigger shops like Woolworths and all that in Cape Town and in KZN. That guy is helping us. We want to entrench traditional clothing, because these women is the only clothing that they can produce. So we want them really to stick on what they know and something that they can explain.
Deputy Minister, one thing which stood out for me when I was doing the research on you, and it shows that in your early career you played an instrumental role in setting up a detainees' parent support committee in the 1980s to thwart the impact of the arrests of many of the anti-apartheid activists.
Yes.
And years later, you were elected to serve as a convener both on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the African Peer Review Mechanism in Mpumalanga.
Yes.
Can you share with us some of the memories, the moments that have stayed with you from those times? And I'm sure that almost in closing the circle of something which was so emotional that you began so many years ago.
Yes, my participation was, you know, in Mpumalanga, we've got all the borders for two countries,
yes.
very big, Swaziland and Mozambique. So now our soldiers at that time, they were moving out and in at those corners. So I was given a responsibility to support some of our detainees, because they were arrested around those areas, Nkomati Port, towards Swaziland and all these borders. So now my responsibility was to really make sure that immediately they arrest this person, I visit the person, get the whereabout in terms of the family and others, and connect that person with the family and support the person while he's there. So that was my responsibility.
Must have been a very emotional one.
Very emotional one, because others were arrested, being shot at and all that, which was, it was a dangerous work, of course, very dangerous, because they need also to have clothing.
Yes,
so you must go and see the guy there, most of the guys there, must go and see the guy there on the window, like, I see this gentleman. Then now you determine that he wears this size. Then you get a tracksuit, then you get some things that you must utilize while you're still in the detention, soap, and so that you can dress well and become a human being as well. So it was a very dangerous situation, because others, they came in and they were shot at, they die. I was very young, of course, very young. But you must go there and get exactly what happened and who is the person, and still to take a picture and send it to the line of command. This is the picture of a person. Who is this? Because you won't know the name. Yes, so now that's how we're working. But, well, when it comes to TRC, that's when it came to mind that we were playing in a very dangerous situation. In fact, we were traumatized because some of the issues, we're doing it out of anger, because we wanted liberation. So we're doing it out of anger. We didn't know the wrongs that we're doing for other people. We're doing it out of anger. And when now we're sitting back and listening how hurt some of our community members were and what bad things that we have done. Because sometimes when we're doing it, you don't see it bad. For example, you get people that go on war, now 20 dies, you know, that you see the corpse. At that time, because you are angry, then you see the corpse, you can arrange, hey, this must go there. You can phone those who have just lost legs and all that, arms and all that. Then you can just phone a doctor, because we had doctors that we are working with. You phone a doctor and say, hey, no, we're taking this person to a hospital. Then you bring this type of people who have got different injuries. Nurses run away. Nurses just literally run away, you know. So you can feel later on when it is related to say, yo, that was bad. But when we are on the scene, then you want to quickly help this and help that and help that, and happy that you have put this in hospital, you have put these ones in mortuary and all that. You feel you have done your part. But when now we had to play back what happened, then it really, your body shrinks. Say, hey, it was me. It was me taking hands and not even pairing with anyone, but just taking those pieces and, you know, and that's when we all had trauma, then we admitted.
A realization of what happened.
Of what horrible things we were dealing with. But we motivated everyone to come, those who have wronged, and those who, you know, everybody, because I was coordinating as a province. I was working with the pastors and with the committee of pastors. So we're coordinating to say, no, people must feel free to say anything, because everyone wants to be relieved. Everyone.
It weighs on the soul.
Yeah, it must work on the soul. Everyone wants to be relieved. So anything must be said. How horrible it is. But you know, when you're taking statements like a policeman, you know, you don't feel. But when the person with the feeling now relates the story, that's then that you can feel it comes down to you. Well, that was the closure of everything.
Today, we're talking to Deputy Minister Mashego Dlamini, who is Deputy Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform in the Republic of South Africa.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro-Soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
Today we're talking to Ms. Mashego Dlamini, the Deputy Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform in the Republic of South Africa. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In the previous segment of our conversation, Deputy Minister shared with us some of her experiences in her early career to where she is today, so moving from activities within the anti-apartheid struggle through to the closure at the TRC, which was a very traumatic and emotional experience. She spoke about some of the initiatives that are currently underway with the department, specifically regarding women in terms of arts and culture, with 93 cooperatives and the move to establish a cooperative bank, and within the clothing space of being able to train and uplift women. Now, whilst we're on the topic of gender equality, a few days ago, Theresa May was appointed as the new Prime Minister of Britain, United Kingdom, as well as leader of the Conservative Party. And not long ago in the US, Hillary Clinton won the presidential nomination for the Democratic Party in the United States. And I recall in her victory speech, she said that it's the first time in U.S. history that a woman has been nominated for the presidential election, and that there is no glass ceiling that cannot be broken. Do you think that something like this could happen in South Africa?
Well, South Africa, it's so dynamic. Its community and its people are so dynamic. It's not a difficult thing to reach that level in South Africa.
Well, I've always admired, from an ANC point of view, the fact that it is 50-50.
Yes.
But 50-50, I would still love to see that we have more of a push on being able to have a female president.
Yes, we have reached the 50-50 as I'm speaking to you now. As the Women's League, we really were supported by the ANC, because this is policy of the ANC. As Women's League, you know, we just monitor and put efforts. So we can confirm that the list that are in the IEC from all provinces, all municipalities, is 50-50. And what we admire most is that these women who are in those lists are women of caliber, very seasoned women that have been in the game. We saw disappointed what is happening in KZN, that women councillors have been killed, women councillors candidate shot at, and in fact they're shot by men. So it's a challenge that as South Africa we must look at, that our men folk must understand that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, in regardless of whatever gender is. So if we'll have a community or a society that will suppress women not to take their rightful position because they want to be options as men, it's a serious problem. Our organization has really spoke very strong about that. We really discourage people, all those people that are doing such things. We're really pleading, because all these women that have been shot at, these are women who are so seasoned. They've been in the game, they've been counselors, they've succeeded in doing their work. So now it looks now we're going back, but not that we're not elected, we are elected, but there are threats that are now starting to come up.
And being elected, you need the support of the public, because
yes,
that's why you're doing. You're involved in public
yes,
service and serving the people.
Yes. So I think that's the setback that we is so unfortunate for us now. But as it stands, we're really ready.
What do you think we need to do, though, in terms of eliminating the stepbacks? Is it a case of socializing people more, of being accepting that women can lead?
We are thinking, as the ANC Women's League, to come up with a program to educate our boys. We've been much on the young girls. We've been doing much on the young girls. We've got a desk. We're supporting them wherever they are. That's why most of them are taking positions in the institutions and all that, because of the support that we're giving them as young women in the ANC Women's League. So we have discussed this matter, and we thought that for this type of tendency not to continue, we need to make sure that we have a program for the boys.
So I think
that
that's very
boys
important.
Can, of course, they will be taught by us as their mothers, not by fathers, you know.
But so they don't
but
feel left
most
out.
Most of the boys have been coming out to say, please, what about us? We can see the girls. We can see the girls are now becoming organized, ready, confidence is built to them. What about us? So it's something that will come up with something.
I think that's a very important initiative.
Mm.
Now, Deputy Minister, turning towards more of a personal perspective, one of the questions that I ask all my guests who have made significant achievements in their respective fields is about the factors that they feel have contributed to their success. Some speak about hard work. Some talk about the role that their mothers have had on their lives. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what have been the key drivers or key factors of success in your life?
Well, a family that is supportive. And if your family is supporting you, you must keep in mind not to disappoint them. So we've got a community that is supportive. I'm a Christian, so now, as a Christian, you need not ready to demise your communities. So everything that you do, you double it. You double it so that it must be felt, it must be seen. It must be felt, it must be seen. So our success is just because we give ourselves time to say, if we want to do things, we want to do it perfectly. Because we've got all those people that are looking at us to say, can you see a woman? Because a failure of a woman becomes the talk of the day.
And it doesn't just reflect on you as the individual. It reflects of all of
womankind.
All
the women, you know. Even husband can tell their wives to say, you are a failure like that woman, you see. So now we are aware of that. So when we do our things, we do it right so that all other women folks must be respected just because of us doing our best. Mm-hmm. Of course, I don't normally sleep. I don't normally sleep before. My mind has been set in a manner that before I sleep, I play a reverse. What is it I have done today? Have I succeeded? What makes me not to succeed here? What is the sticky point? Then I had to think about that. But if the sticky point is so crucial, in fact, I won't sleep. You know, you see, that's the problem. But it helps me that I will know that tomorrow I must do more, must do this. It is like failure to convince people. I never fail to convince people because my take was that if people are there, it's better that I can speak to them. I've got the language of the community.
And I think a lot of the work that you've done has been very, very hands-on.
Yes, so we must take a stand to really make people to know what you are doing, what is right, what is not right.
And can you share with us what you would say has been the best lesson you've learned in your career?
Well, I've learned a lot of the best lessons in my life. But the best lessons was when I started a program, one of the professors said to me, you know, you should have just got your master's. The only problem, you're too busy. When I conceive something, I document it and I implement it and it works. That's the best lessons I have. Sometimes I implement something that when I report to national, they took it as a national program and they spread it. Like the going back to the field, mm-hmm. must be at the Masimin. It has just become a national program. Now I started another one called Asbieles Bayen for cattle farmers and all that. Then it was adopted as a national program. So I can bring something.
It's making that it will, real.
Yeah, that will touch people. When I look at people, then I think of something, then I roll it out.
Deputy Minister, we're unfortunately coming to the end of the show today. But what I'd like, as we close the program, if you could please use this platform to send a message to all those women listening to us on the continent that possibly due to their circumstances, gender equality might not be first on their agenda because they've got the daily reality of taking care of their family, raising children, putting food on the table. So if you could just give us a message.
Well, my message is that I think wherever we are in the world, we must trust women. Women has got nowhere to go. Women are these people that even if how hot it is, they can just stabilize their situation. Because the love of the kids and the love of the community stick to the life of a woman. Because if I had to relocate, there's many things that I must consider. So now, if you educate a woman or you give a woman a position, it's a person that you can trust. Because it's a person that every situation, it can be reflected to a woman. If it's a good situation, women are happy. If it's a bad situation, they will put it as is. They're not going to camouflage and say, no, I'm doing well, even if she can feel she's not doing well. These are truthful people. Of course, they're truthful because they don't want to carry the burden alone. They want to share the burden with everyone so that they can get help. These are people that they don't feel shy to be helped or to be supported. They can't move beyond reproach, that you can't approach a woman even if you can see that there's something wrong or you can see that there's something good that is doing. These are people that are easy to be accessible. When there's dead, women change the face and they feel the pain. When there are good things, women can celebrate. So these are people that have got open colors. They must be trusted.
Thank you for sharing that message with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to Ms. Mashego Dlamini, the Deputy Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform in the Republic of South Africa.